Good evening, everyone.
We will continue in our Bible study through the book of Matthew.
We will start with chapter 8 and verse 1. Jesus Christ has finished with the Beatitudes and teaching his disciples, and now he's going to get underway with his ministry and traveling around carrying out his ministry on the earth prior to his crucifixion. Chapter 8, verse 1, when he was come down from the mountain, great multitudes followed him, and behold, there came a leper and worshipped him, saying, Lord, if you will, you can make me clean. And Jesus put forth his hand and touched him, saying, I will. Be thou clean. And immediately his leprosy was cleansed. He can do that. He can still do that. And Jesus said unto him, See thou tell no man, but go your way, show yourself to the priest, and offer the gift that Moses commanded for a testimony unto them. The reason he told him to do this is, it says, for a testimony unto them, for a witness unto them. And they were still under the Levitical priesthood, the old covenant. And under the Levitical priesthood, they were to do this. They were to go to the priest, and they were to leave an offering, as Moses commanded, and as a witness to the people of this miracle that had taken place, they should handle it that way. And that was showing they had faith, but also they had works. They would do their part as well as have faith in God and his intervention. So that's why he said what he said, as far as this is what you need to do. I want to turn to Luke chapter 5 to clarify that a little bit. Luke chapter 5. And verse 14, Luke 5:14, and he charged him to tell no man, but go and show yourself to the priest and offer for your cleansing, according as Moses commanded, for a testimony unto them. And you can read about that in the Old Testament, where they did that under the Levitical priesthood and the Old Covenant. You can read places like Leviticus 13, Leviticus 14, and so on. The main thing is, though, Jesus Christ healed him, and healed him right on the spot. And what a wonderful blessing. Leprosy is one of the most horrible diseases known to man. And it was so horrible they'd have to be separated into colonies, and it's so contagious. And yet Christ just simply healed him because this man believed Jesus Christ and asked him, and Christ saw his faith. Verse 5 now. And when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him. Now Capernaum is a very interesting place. You might want to do a little study there. We've been there. And it is where Peter had a house, and in the days of the apostles, it had a thriving, booming fishing business and industry. It was right on the Sea of Galilee. A very famous synagogue mentioned in the Bible is there. Now, it's been wrecked and rebuilt and wrecked and rebuilt, but the original foundation is still there, and they just built another synagogue on top of it. And that synagogue that they built on top of it, or two of them after the original, I don't know which, but there's been another synagogue built on the original foundation of the first synagogue, and it's there, and we've been there. And it's not a huge building, but it's a rather large auditorium. And Jesus Christ spoke there. So Capernaum is kind of a central hub out of which Jesus Christ moved around in the area of Palestine and the area of the Sea of Galilee, carrying on his ministry. And there's evidence that he had a home there, that Jesus Christ had a home there. Peter definitely had a house there. Several of the apostles who were in the fishing business came from there. So this is an important place, Capernaum. Let's notice here, verse 5, when Jesus was entered into Capernaum, there came unto him a centurion beseeching him and saying, Lord, my servant lies at home, sick of the palsy, grievously tormented. And Jesus said unto him, I will come and heal him. See, Christ could discern this man had faith. And the centurion answered and said, Lord, I'm not worthy that you should come under my roof, but speak the word only, and my servant shall be healed. For I am a man under authority, having soldiers under me. And I say to this man, go, and he goes, and to another, come, and he comes, and to my servant, do this, and he does it. This man was in charge of about 100 soldiers, you know, sentry, 100, centurion, and he had a lot of power and authority, but he was under power and authority too, as he said. So he said, please, if you just speak the word, that's enough. And when Jesus heard it, he marveled, and he said to them that followed, verily I say unto you, I have not found so great faith, no, not in Israel. And I say unto you that many shall come from the east and west, and shall sit down with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven, not in heaven, but from heaven. But the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness. Those who ought to be there, but just throw out their chance of being there, they're not going to make it. And there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. In other words, there's going to be a lot of suffering taking place because they did not make it into the kingdom. But this captain of 100 had faith and said, if you just say the word, you don't even need to come. If you just say the word, he'll be healed. And right here where it talks about the children of the kingdom shall be cast out into outer darkness, that's just talking about people that fall away. And there will be some that do, and some that will not make it into the kingdom. It says, there shall be weeping and gnashing of teeth. It doesn't say where the weeping and gnashing of teeth will be taking place, but there will be suffering and wailing and weeping and gnashing of teeth in connection with the fact that they fall away and then they are put into the lake of fire. I think one of the most agonizing problems of someone who is put into the lake of fire is before they're thrown in, the realization that they will never have another chance. They had a chance for salvation. They didn't make the most of it. They threw it away. They lost out. They rebelled. They became incorrigibly wicked. And now they're going to lose out on all of the fantastic future they could have had in the kingdom. It's too late now. It's over. Now they're going to be destroyed forever. That's an agonizing, horrible thought. And I could see where they would be weeping and gnashing of teeth as they realize that and wailing. But once they're thrown into the lake of fire, they're not going to be weeping and gnashing teeth in there. They're simply going to be burned up. That'll occur before they're thrown into the lake of fire, or as it's described here, into outer darkness. That's a type of eternal death, if you will, the second death, when it refers to human beings. In other places, it's described as the place Satan, the devil, and his demons will be bound. They won't be destroyed. They'll be bound because they're spirit beings, and they'll be put in the lake of fire, and then cast into outer darkness and bound forever, rendered null and void. Human beings will be cast into the lake of fire. Figuratively speaking, it's a future of total darkness because they're going to be totally dead, eternally dead, lose out on everything. And that realization is going to cause a tremendous amount of agony. So we want to make sure that we don't end up being included in that group. And the way for that not to happen is to stay close to God and walk with Him. And endure to the end. It says those that endure to the end will be saved. And that's what we want to do. Now notice verse 13. And Jesus said unto the centurion, go your way, and as you have believed, so be it done unto you. And his servant was healed in the selfsame hour. And notice what a wonderful man this captain of 100 people was. He cared for those under him. He looked after them. And he looked after his servant. And he wanted to get him all the help he could from this horrible disease of palsy. Verse 14, look at this, brethren, it's so interesting. And when Jesus was come into Peter's house, see, he was in Capernaum, and he was come into Peter's house. We were there right now. It's not the rather large city it was back then. It's a settlement, but not a large settlement. And we took the boat from the other side of the Sea of Galilee and came right across the middle of the Sea of Galilee and docked right there in Capernaum. It was interesting. That was in 1989. Our son Jonathan was about 8 years old, I guess. And the boat was a pretty big boat. And we got all settled, and I got to looking around. I couldn't find Jonathan. I had to go looking for him. And I went around the boat looking. I came up to the wheelhouse where the captain was. And inside there were the wheel, the steering of the ship, the big steering wheel, was the captain. And right there steering the boat was Jonathan. He had Jonathan in front of the steering wheel of the boat. And he was so small, he reached out his right hand, left hand, and had a hold of the outside of the wheel and could barely reach that far. And there he was, as we were going across the Sea of Galilee, with the captain sitting there with a big smile on his face, and a little boy steering this ship right across the middle of the Sea of Galilee toward the city of Capernaum. And boy, he was having a lot of fun. But as we neared Capernaum, then the captain kind of moved Jonathan aside gently, and he took over because he had to dock the ship. Quite an experience. Well, as we looked around there, we saw where they were excavating a structure. And we got to looking into it and asking questions, and they said that all evidence points to that being Peter's house that they're excavating. And it wasn't a huge house, but it was a nice, big enough house for Peter and his family. And Christ spent a lot of time there. And then apparently Christ had a house there in Capernaum as well. And when you hear about the brethren meeting in houses, and you do hear about it often, they weren't big houses, so the congregations were small, like we have today. And yet they were very zealous. But I just want you to notice something here, verse 14. When Jesus was come into Peter's house, he saw his wife's mother laid and sick of a fever. Did you see that? It said here that Peter was married. Really? Of course, the Catholic Church says that Peter was the first pope. And the Catholic Church says priests can't be married. And certainly the pope can't be married. Well, if Peter was the first pope, why was he married? Of course, he wasn't the first pope. He was the first or leading apostle. But he was married. He had a wife and probably had children. And the other apostles, many of them were married and had children as well, probably. But it makes it plain here. He saw his wife's mother laid and sick of a fever, Peter's mother-in-law. Now, how do you square that if you say, well, the ministers can't be married, but Peter was the first pope, and he was married? It doesn't square with the Bible. We have to go by what the Bible says. So when he walked into the house, Jesus Christ saw Peter's mother-in-law sick, and look what he did. Verse 15, he touched her hand, and the fever left her, and she arose and ministered unto them. Healed instantly, and what did she do? Got right up and started serving other people. When the even was come, in the evening, they brought unto him many that were possessed with demons, and he cast out the spirits with his word and healed all that were sick. Demon-possessed. There is more of that in this world today than we might realize, and not only in mental institutions, but out in the world. You see crazy people doing crazy things, inhumane things. And that's because they are probably influenced and even possessed by a demon or demons. Now, we don't need to worry about that. We just be aware of it. But we don't need to worry about that because we are looking to God, and He protects us and takes care of us and looks after us, and we have His Spirit. But people in the world leave themselves open to this kind of thing and even invite it and play around with it, and they can get into big trouble and end up doing horrible things. Well, Christ took care of that, and He cast them out. There's no other way to handle that kind of thing. And just think what a relief when Jesus Christ cast out the spirits with His word and healed all that were sick, verse 16. That it might be fulfilled which was spoken by Isaiah the prophet, saying, Himself took our infirmities and bare our sicknesses. He healed all that were sick. See, not only did Jesus Christ take our sins upon Himself, therefore we take the wine at the Passover, picturing His shed blood, when He shed His blood to pay the penalty of our sins. He also took our physical sins on Himself, His broken body, and therefore then He heals us. We can be healed then. The penalty and the sin is removed. Himself took our infirmities and bare our sicknesses. Thank God and thank Jesus Christ that He does heal today and will continue to do so. And when we take the Passover and take the broken bread, which is symbolic of His broken body, we mention that pictures the fact that we are healed of our sicknesses and of our diseases by His stripes, by His sacrifice, as well as forgiven of our sins by His sacrifice. Makes it very plain in verse 17. And this was a prophecy given by Isaiah, of course, in Isaiah chapter 53. Himself took our infirmities and bare our sicknesses. Jesus Christ quotes the Old Testament quite often, as you see. Now when Jesus saw great multitudes about him, he gave commandment to depart unto the other side. And he wasn't running away from serving people. He served multitudes over and over and over again. But there came a time when he needed to take care of something else. And so he said, look, now we've got to leave. I can't just stay here for the rest of my life. We've got to leave. We need to go over the lake. He had come off of the mountain, and we've been there. We think it probably is the mountain where he talked to his disciples about the Beatitudes. Came down, went over, went into the city of Capernaum, and now he said, it's time for us to go on the other side of the Sea of Galilee or of the water. I've got other things I need to do. So he gave commandment to depart unto the other side. And a certain scribe came and said unto him, Master, I will follow you whithersoever you go. And Jesus said unto him, the foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has nowhere to lay his head. It doesn't mean that he didn't have a house. It doesn't mean that he couldn't stay with Peter or the other apostles. It just meant that he's going to be traveling all over, and he's going to be here and there and everywhere. And there's no place for him to put down roots. And if you say you want to follow me, you're going to be on the go everywhere. You need to consider what you're saying. You're not going to be able to stop, put down roots, and that's where you're going to stay and travel a little bit, but most of the time stay in one place. No, that's not what I do. I move everywhere because I got a lot I have to do to fulfill my Father's business. And so he told him that. Jesus said unto him, the foxes have holes, and the birds of the air have nests, but the Son of Man has not where to lay his head. And another of his disciples said unto him, Lord, suffer me first to go and bury my father, and then I'll follow you. But first I need to go and bury my father. But Jesus said unto him, follow me and let the dead bury their dead. Now, that doesn't mean that the funeral was taking place right at the time he said that. Not necessarily. But nevertheless, he was telling him, listen, if you want to follow me, you got to put me first. You can arrange for others to take care of your father's funeral, and you can come back into the area at another time, but I can't wait until your father dies and you hold the funeral and then we leave. I've got to go now. So if you're going to come with me, you're going to have to come now, and you're going to have to let the dead bury the dead, meaning those that are spiritually dead, those that are not in the church. They can bury the dead. Your relatives, your friends, those that are not with me, who are spiritually dead, they can bury your father when he dies. And you need to follow me, and they'll take care of it. And of course, we'll read in other places in the Bible where he would say this to somebody who said, I want to follow you. And they'd say, well, I got to take care of this, and I got to take care of that, and I got to go elsewhere. And some of them, they went ahead and said, I'm going with you. And those who did that became apostles or very strong members of the church later on, probably. But those who said, oh, I've got to take care of this and take care of that, they put that before him, and that's where they ended up. Christ is telling him, I'm busy, I'm doing the work. Anybody who's going to follow me, got to go right now, put me first. And there's other ways to handle everything else. So anybody who wanted to follow Jesus Christ, have to put him first. That's the way it was then, that's the way it is now. We enter into a covenant, he comes first. He blesses us, but we put him first. Can't put anything or anybody before him. It wasn't like he was saying, oh, you don't need to worry about your father or a funeral. Jesus Christ in other places made it very clear that we have to honor the dead and that we have to take care of that in a very dignified way. But this man could have handled that by organizing it with friends, with family, and it would have been done in a very dignified, honorable way, and he could have gone with Christ. Verse 23, and when he was entered into a ship, his disciples followed him. And behold, there arose a great tempest in the sea, insomuch that the ship was covered with the waves. But he was asleep, and his disciples came to him and awoke him, saying, Lord, save us, we perish. You know, that's one thing about the Sea of Galilee. Right out of nowhere, a storm can come up all of a sudden, and man, you can be in big trouble out there on that sea. It's not just a lake, and it's not like the Mediterranean Ocean, but it is a huge body of water. And it's deep, and it's teeming with fish, and it's surrounded with beautiful mountains. Not like the Rocky Mountains, but very nice hills and mountains. but it can be a very rough body of water. Winds can blow down through the mountain passes and hit that water, and all of a sudden while you're out there, a storm can whip up very suddenly. It's known for that. And the fishermen having their boats out there had to be prepared for that. And that's what happened here. And where'd they find him? Well, he was down. He was asleep. And he wasn't worried about it, but they were. And here they had already seen miracles that Jesus Christ was doing. They had already realized this was somebody special. God in the flesh. And he's on this boat with us. You mean to tell me God's going to let this boat sink with him on it? Oh, he wouldn't do that. But see, they hadn't developed the faith to think that way yet. They just saw a storm, and it was lapping over the boat, and the water was running on the deck, and what was he doing? Asleep while they were trying to figure out what's going to happen to the boat. He wasn't worried. Save us, we perish. Verse 26, and he said unto them, why are you fearful, O you of little faith? What are you worried about? I'm not going to let this boat sink. Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. But the men marveled, saying, what manner of man is this, that even the winds and the sea obey him? And of course, he is in charge of the weather. Now, mankind has cut himself off from God, and so God has backed off and let man go his own way, and therefore then, because of his sin and rebellion, bad weather happens and God doesn't intervene. And of course, Satan will whip it up at every chance he gets. But there are still times when God does intervene and protect his people. He's in charge of everything, and he can certainly control the weather. And here's a case of where he did. People say, oh, nobody can do anything about the weather. God can do anything about the weather he wants. There can be a number 5 rated hurricane thundering out across a field headed straight for a farm, and Jesus Christ could just say, stop, and the hurricane stops and disappears, or the tornado stops and disappears. He's in charge. I know of cases where brethren in the church have been protected like that. I know one time on the farm, my sister and I had to go out to the barn to get some things and bring them back to the kitchen, and it was bad weather, and we were out there sacking everything up, and a tornado was gathering, and it began to form, and it came right down through our neighborhood. The rest of our family were in the house, and we were out there in the barn, and it was too far for us to run for the house. So all we could do was just pray, which we did. And that tornado came down through the woods, just flattening trees, and when it got close to our house, it just lifted up, went right over our home, right over our barn, and on down a ways, dropped down again, and just started laying a path of fallen trees for, looked to me like about a mile. I believe God heard our prayer, and he protected us. When that all passed over and everything calmed down again and we took off running for the house, you can be sure our family was there waiting for us. Now, my dad would have come and gotten us, but it was too late. He couldn't do it. So they were praying and we were praying, and God protected us. And I've heard of other people who have been protected when God intervenes and diverts the weather and protects them and their property. And we can be thankful for that. And we need to be praying for one another. You know, we're entering into a season where usually we have a tremendous number of tornadoes. For some reason, we've had basically none this spring. Let's hope we don't. But let's also remember to pray for one another. We have brethren living right in Tornado Alley, so to speak. And God can certainly protect, and he has, and he will, and he does. And here's the case of where he just took care of it. Nobody else could do that. No amount of predicting, griping, complaining, bellyaching. You know how people bellyache about the weather. I've had enough of this rain, and they blame the weatherman. I've heard some weathermen said that people have even threatened them, as if they're the ones who are bringing on the bad weather. Well, they don't want the weather to be bad any more than anybody else does. Nobody can do anything about the weather. You can get out of the weather, but you can't change the weather except God. But he can anytime he gets ready to. But he's pulled his hands off that, and Satan whips up bad weather here and bad weather there and catastrophe and flood and all that, and then God intervenes from time to time for the sake of his people. But you have drought that's really, really critical out in California right now. California has 38 million people in it. That's the size of the population of Canada, and a huge amount of food for the rest of the nation comes from California, and they're in a drought right now. you go to the east, and they have floods, record-breaking snow and floods. And it's either too little or too much. In the kingdom of God, it's going to be just right. But that's because man has turned his back on God, and so he's suffering from Satan and the god of this world. In the kingdom of God, Satan will be put away, and Jesus Christ will be in charge, and the weather will be the most fantastic weather that you can imagine. You know what a beautiful day is like, where the temperature is just right and the beautiful blue sky, a few clouds floating overhead, nice crisp air, a little bit of a breeze, birds chirping, and flowers and trees, and you take a walk. It's just fantastic. Can you imagine the kind of weather we're going to have in the millennium for the people who live there, and we as spirit beings will be a part of keeping it that way? Well, the one who brings that about, we're reading about right here. Then he arose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. Verse 27, the men marveled, saying, what manner of man is this that even the winds and the sea obey him? And when he was come to the other side into the country of the Gergesenes, there met him two possessed with demons coming out of the tombs, exceedingly fierce, so that no man might pass by that way. There have been people who get possessed with demons, and the power they have is supernatural. And it takes several people to subdue them. They could pick things up and throw things and so on way beyond their normal human strength. It's very, very dangerous, and that's the case here. Exceedingly fierce, so that no man might pass by that way. It was too dangerous. You stayed away from where they were. They were in a graveyard and going in and out of tombs. Tombs there weren't always just headstones. Sometimes they were rooms where they could get in out of the weather. Rooms that covered a grave, little rooms. You can see some of those kinds of tombs even today in some graveyards. They're usually early and old tombs. Verse 29, and behold, they cried out, saying, what have we to do with you, Jesus, thou Son of God? Are you come here to torment us before the time? They know their judgment is coming, and their judgment will be meted out to them, and Satan's judgment will be meted out to him, and then they'll be removed. And they know it's coming. And they're saying, what are you coming here for now? Are you going to do that now? Isn't this too early? It's not our time yet. Why are you going to torment us before our time? They were asking him. And there was a good way off from them a herd of many swine feeding. So the demons besought him, saying, if you cast us out, suffer us to go away into the herd of swine. See, one thing that demons want to do is figure out some way that they could die. They don't want to continue living in this sorry state that they chose. But they are spirit beings. They are fallen angels, but still made out of spirit. So they chose to follow Satan, and now that's what they have as a life. They are in Satan's company, one-third of the angels, and Lucifer, who used to be an incredible archangel, has now become Satan, and the demons who used to be angels have now become demons. He took one-third of the angels with him in rebellion to God, and they are evil, horrible, vile demons and spirit beings. But they don't want to keep going along trapped in their current way of life. And so they're always trying to figure out a way where they could die. Well, I'll possess a human being. When that human being dies, well, then I'll die with them. But that doesn't happen. And here, they wanted Christ to cast them into a herd of pigs, and when those pigs died, maybe they could die. But of course, they didn't. But anyway, they asked him to do that, and he did it. So the demons besought him, saying, if you cast us out, suffer us to go away into the herd of swine. And he said unto them, go. He's in charge. And when they were come out, they went into the herd of swine, and behold, the whole herd of swine ran violently down a steep place into the sea, and perished in the waters. I don't know about you, but I don't want to be anywhere around a big herd of pigs that are demon-possessed. Can you imagine what a terrible situation that is? Now, these people, they should not have been in the hog business. They should have been raising sheep and cattle. In that day and time, I mean, they knew about clean and unclean foods. The Old Covenant and the Jews and the Levitical priesthood, it was clear. But just like today, people are going to do whatever they want to do. And so you have people in the hog business, they have these huge herd of pigs. And we've traveled out west before, and when you get out west, you come to cattle feedlots, and if the wind is blowing in the wrong direction while you're traveling down the interstate, there may be 5,000 head of cattle in feedlots over there where they're just force-feeding them out before they take them to the slaughterhouse. It's a terrible smell, but that's nothing compared to 4,000 or 5,000 pigs. That's the most vile smell I think I've ever smelled, even worse than a paper mill. And when you coop up a bunch of pigs together and just feed them and feed them and feed them so you can fatten them up and take them to slaughter, you can be 10 miles away. And if the wind is blowing in the wrong direction, it's almost overwhelming to you. You want to get out of there as quick as you can. And I wonder, how in the world can people work around that? I don't know how they can. They probably wear masks and everything else. Well, these people had a huge herd of swine. And so when these demons wanted to be cast out and then they could go and possess those pigs and get inside there and cause them to run down into the sea and drown, maybe they could die with the swine. Well, the people who were in that business shouldn't have been in that business. So Christ said, if that's what you want, go. And they did. And the whole herd of swine ran violently down a steep place into the sea and perished in the waters. And they that kept them, they that, you know, looked after them, they that kept them fled and went their ways into the city and told everything and what was befallen to the possessed of the demons, to the demon-possessed people that Christ came in touch with there. The two demon-possessed people that were in the tombs were very fierce. The people that had the hog business saw what happened, and they went charging into the city, spreading news to everybody about what had happened and what had befallen to the possessed of the devils. The way that they had been healed, but the way also that the pigs ran into the sea and their herd was gone. Verse 34, and behold, the whole city came out to meet Jesus. And when they saw him, they besought him, begged him, that he would depart out of their coast or out of their region. They didn't want any more of their pigs to be lost. I mean, here this man came in there, and he took care of those two fierce people that were possessed with demons. But in the process, we lost our hog herds. We don't want this man here. And so they ask him, please move on. Please leave. We want to keep on with our way of life. We don't want anything like this to happen again. And so he went on his way. But you can be sure that accounts of this right here were spread far and wide. Jesus became more and more famous and more sought after. And so that concludes chapter 8.
Until next time, this is Charles Bryce with the Enduring Church of God.